Blog Talk
Hey everybody.
Radio.
What I've left behind, you want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to tonight's Stop Child Abuse Now radio show, brought to you by NASCA, the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. My name is Annie, and I am a survivor, and I would like to read to you the mission statement of the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse, NASCA. We have a single purpose at NASCA, to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including childhood sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so with only two goals. One, educating the public, especially as related to helping society get over its taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, CSA. Presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone. And two, offering hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse, and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. And Penelope, are you there? I was going to introduce Penelope because I'm having trouble with my computer. Let me try this one. Are you there, Penelope?
Hi, Annie. My apologies. I was actually greeting a caller who is on our panel this evening in listen-only mode. So my apologies. I was on the back line, but thank you for welcoming me in. And I know that we also have Bill on the line as well. So, Annie, did you need me to introduce anything on the show for you?
Well, I cannot see the studio. I don't know why.
Okay.
I can't see it. And so I can't see who's there and who's not.
All right.
But
so,
you say we
right.
have Bill
so
and we have one other?
Yes. So I can be your eyes for you. So, yes, we have Bill. We have someone who's called in from California who wishes to be in listen-only mode, but we do have our special guest, Bill, and I will actually unmute his mic. So if anybody else joins, I will just announce that I will be your eyes for you, okay?
Thank you. I don't know what's going on with this, but we'll figure
no
it
problem.
Out.
No
problem. Thank you. Hi, Bill.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing well, thank you. Except I have trouble with my computer. It won't show me the studio. So that's okay.
That. You're in good hands with Penelope, no problem.
That's right. So how are you tonight, Bill?
I'm fine. I was just waiting for the show to start. You know, kind of lazy before that, but I'm fine. Thank you for asking.
Mm-hmm. And do you have a theme in mind for tonight?
No, I don't have a theme, but I mean, I'm willing to discuss anything. We should say that these nights are particularly interesting because they feature some kind of professional person who is co-hosting the event or the meeting, which is me tonight. And they field topics that we would like them to come from the audience or the listener or the panel member. But that doesn't matter. If they don't, we can make them up on our own. And we proceed by, you know, it's a topic discussion, question and answer type thing, or a theme can be developed until we run out of things to say about it, and then we switch to something else and go on like that. And we've been doing this recently with our regular shows when our guest doesn't come on too, and it's worked really well. So we'll probably continue doing this sometimes on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday as well, if it happens, that we'll have just a question and answer show featuring, you know, whoever shows up, and the host can lead it.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't want to miss shows, and we have been having a heck of a time getting guests, collecting guests ahead of time. So this will resolve it. We did it a few times recently, and it worked splendidly, really. And it took all the pressure off, you know, to know that that's what we were going to do if our guest didn't show mm-hmm. up. And sure enough, it happened. We just went right, didn't miss a beat. So that's what the most recent development has been as far as the show is concerned. We will still want to do shows on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday with special guests. But I've been doing this for a long, long time almost by myself, and it's costing me so much stress and energy. I just gotta admit that I'm only one person and I do so much with the website and all the other stuff. I'm just not going to freak out about it when we don't have a guest. Go ahead.
Yeah. But tonight we have someone who's called in and they want to be in listen only mode, but I think that this is someone that is, you know, very curious and wanting to see what NASC is all about. And I'm very thankful that they have called in and had the courage to call in, even though they just want to listen and not, you know, participate in the panel discussion. So I feel because we have someone on the line, it's a great, you know, opportunity for us to, you know, have a discussion tonight, a true format of a survivor professional discussion, whether, you know, obviously we'll have to, you know, we can toss around some topics that might be relevant to us,
yeah,
but, you know, going on
this, life,
out the adult survivor child abuse, but I really wanted to just, you know, make sure that the person who's listening in right now is, you know, getting a nice, flavor and experience of what this type of show tonight is all about, because they've, you know, they've called in for this type of format tonight.
I've spoken to this fellow multiple times, but most of the time he does call in and ask to listen only. However, last week he called in and he fully participated in the show, which I thought was great, and he did fine, and the show did fine. And Blog Talk Radio actually allowed us back, you know. So if he would like to join us, we would love to have him. He's a great guy. There's nothing wrong with his panel participation at all, so that's
okay.
For him to decide, though. Now, how he's going to decide, we got to check in with him occasionally.
Yeah, and I absolutely will, but I just wanted to make sure that we, you know, I just wanted to throw out there that we should, I would love to talk about something relevant to something, you know, that as adult survivors of child abuse, you know, we find, so I feel like something's always coming up, right? Something's always, I'm always, you know, it's recovery, you know, every day there's something that I'm navigating. And I do look forward to these shows because I always learn something. They do help me as this is an ongoing process. And so I don't know if either of you had a topic that you want to bring up tonight or not. I certainly can suggest one if not.
Well, that works for me. How about you, Annie?
Oh, all I can think about is being afraid. the topic of being afraid, because I'm a survivor, mm-hmm. when I hear of scary things in the news, I get very afraid.
Mm-hmm. Mm, okay. I like that one. Well, we'll take a vote on it. What do you think, Penelope?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think fear is a very, it's a real emotion that I lived in fear, all of my childhood and the lion's share of my life with just the patterns that were still present, within my family of origin. And so fear is definitely a theme that, obviously played a big part of my childhood. And still today, to this day, like Annie said, I mean, there are things that I find myself, have that old familiar feeling as things come up, whether it's life events, things that happen in this world, things that I see in the news, or just interactions that I have either intentionally or non-intentionally with members of, my family of origin. So I think it's a great topic, and I can definitely add a lot to that subject.
I'm pretty sure all of us can, because each one of us, none of us escape that, Annie, none of us escape that. And it's one of the things that keep us silent to begin with, and none of us escape that either. I mean, nobody comes into their, 20s going, boy, I'm so glad I now can have an opportunity to talk about, no, we don't do that. we come in and we have our lips zipped, right? my sister used to say, actually she used to say, "Jip your jipper." She couldn't say Z, so "Jip your jipper" when she was tiny, when she was small. And that's how we behave until at some point there may be some reason that we hear the message that talking is much better than not talking, that getting it out is much more important than keeping it in. And some of us believe that. And we go ahead and we talk about it. We get it out of us in some way. And sure enough, it is better. But the point is that even before we get to that point, we're all experiencing fear. So what kind of fear? Fear of being humiliated, for example. We think that people will think far less of us than otherwise if we admit that we were abused as children. And so we don't want to be embarrassed or humiliated or thought to be a bad person, so we don't risk that, so we don't share, because not sharing is one way that we won't have to bring it up, so that's what we all do, and at some point, we have to decide whether our pain of not sharing is greater than our fear of sharing or not. And if one is bigger than the other, it's going to keep us there. And for the most part, it's the fear of sharing the act of silence that's a much bigger impetus to keep us quiet. But at some point, many of us do, and all of us here on the panel do, find a way at least to let it out and stop keeping it a secret. So I think that's kind of pertinent to the discussion. Along with all the stuff that's happening now in recovery, we all share that fear, at the beginning. It's our brain who is our enemy. And you have to come to a place where you kind of realize this, that we are lied to by our brain all the time. Because, and I don't mean the brain is an entity, but we talk to ourselves, right, all the time. And the talking can be real or it can be not real. It can be coming from fear. And the reality is there's nothing happening right now in my life that I need to be afraid of. There's some things I'd rather be different, but I'm not, like the train isn't coming down the track at me right at this moment. Maybe tomorrow, but not today. So we have to realize where we really are. And where we really are is, I tell you, I decided that I was going to try and come from a place of gratitude and fear, and realize that I have so many things including all of you guys, our fellowship, our family, that stand between me and having to be afraid. And I have so much more of that that I can be grateful for. And then many gifts have come my way, too, in a process by which I can get recovery and, lots of tools and lots of things to do. And now it's a lot of years later. My life is very complicated with recovery, and that's fine. But at one time, it was very, very complicated and full of, the fear of the abuse. I don't any longer fear the abuse. In fact, I freely talk about my experiences in my youth because I know that it helps others, and I don't get to pick out who it helps. I may not even know who it's going to help, but I know that when we share, any of us share our stories, we are allowing the persons that are listening to identify, and we don't know ahead of time who it's going to be that's going to identify. But those that do will probably be able to step into the next, whatever the next thing is for them towards recovery, and it might be the next meeting, it might be the phone call they'll make tonight, it might be some other, some article they read on the web, it could be another one of these radio shows, whatever it is. We just simply want them to keep going. And that's recovery, it's just keep going. And I have like a foundation that assures me that if I keep going, I'm not going to fall through the cracks. That, I'll be taken care of by you guys and my higher power, of course, but by you guys who I never knew before, but now I know very well, and I'm so grateful to have that, if nothing else. So I'll shut up now and let you guys share a little bit. Otherwise, I can talk to you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I had to write this down when you said it. I like what you said about the train is not coming at you today. I totally know
right.
that feeling.
Right.
Today the train's not coming at me. Maybe tomorrow it will.
Yeah.
But, and being prepared for that train to hit me by using my thankfulness, I think that's a great idea. Just, okay, I'm grateful for this, I'm grateful for that. Okay, maybe the train is going to hit me, but I'm still very grateful, and I can take it better. How's that sound?
Don't forget, that's great, but don't forget that all reality is in the moment. All reality is in the moment. In other words, the past is no longer here. It's gone. We can have learned some things from the past, but it's no longer running our life right now. And the future is not here. And that's usually where fear lives, because fear is about the future. What's going to happen to me tomorrow, right? Is the train going to hit me tomorrow? Well, don't live in tomorrow. Live in today. Because in the present moment, nothing's happening. Nothing's going to happen. And so the fear of being in another space in the future, or the resentment, that's the other problem, of the past, neither one of those are real. They're not. They're illusions. They don't exist. Where we exist is today in this moment only. And if we can keep ourselves there, we can usually be more comfortable than if we live in the other spaces.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. And right now at this moment in my time, I'm facing someone's possible. And living in the moment seems like, okay, I'm living in the moment because tomorrow it could happen. I just can't seem to get that off of my mind, that something bad will happen, because it will.
Will happen, I'm sorry, to who, Annie?
My brother.
Okay. Well, that's understandable. Okay. What you're doing is you're pre-grieving.
Okay? Yeah.
You're grieving ahead of the thing that happens, but you know it's going to happen, and that's really natural to do. And whenever we lose people, we do go through a grieving period, especially when we're spiritually in touch with ourselves a little bit, or our higher power a little bit. We're vulnerable because we've opened ourselves up to this. and, you know, kind of invited the feelings that we're having in, you know, rather than do the obsessions and the maybe addictions that we were doing before. We've stopped doing them, and now we feel a little raw. That's how I feel when something like that's going on. I feel raw. Like, I don't know what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't control it. But pre-grieving is real. And it's going to especially happen when the person we're grieving for is very close to us, a family member or so forth. So I think that's very natural. I don't think you should worry about it. You're going to have to grieve no matter what, okay?
Yeah.
And there's help for that, believe me. You know, we'll be here for you no matter what. And
thank you. I know that. Yes, thank you.
Sure.
Anybody else have a train coming at them? Penelope,
I mean, I do. And by the way, I know we have another caller that called in, so I'm going to greet them in the back line in a moment. Caller with area code, it's area code 978, so I'll be right with you. But I do have, obviously, as you know, my husband was diagnosed with advanced metastatic prostate cancer, so there's a lot of unknown there.
Right.
You know, he's still a young man. I'm still very young. We have three sons. I mean, I consider them young. They're 18, 19, and 20. So, yes. And I, you know, I do, as you know, professionally, I, you know, teach at a call at local college, but I also, you know, I teach mindfulness, teach academically, but I also teach mindfulness and meditation. And even though I teach that, you know, I've really had to, this is unfamiliar territory, and I've really had to use those tools when I find myself pre-grieving, like you stated, Bill. And also just to try and regulate, because a lot of the breathing and really, you know, trying to bring oneself back into the present moment. It's a lot about regulation of the brain and of the mind. And I think when we're in a fear, right, a state of fight or flight, that's a form of dysregulation. And so it's part of just bringing the brain, you know, all the components of the brain, so they're, you know, they're going haywire. I try and bring them all back together, you know, because reintegration was a big part of the, you know, recovery that a lot of the work that I've done in therapy. That's why I think it's a constant process to stay regulated. I don't think we ever, you know, just get regulated and stay there. So I think that that's part of the journey and part of the work. So I think that does also talk in terms of a freight train coming. Yeah, I think it comes, you know, the unpredictability as well. Something that we just can't control. I don't like things that are unpredictable. So there.
Thank you. And I'm sorry to hear about your husband.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
Me too, of course.
Thank you. So I'm actually and greet this caller on the back line now, but thank you for engaging me, both Annie and Bill, and I will be back.
Thank you, Penelope.
Okay, great.
Yeah, there's a extra person now that's called in. Penelope's going to check on. We don't know who it is. It's a number that I don't recognize, and I guess Penelope obviously doesn't either. But that's good. We want people to call in who have not been here before, you know, and we want them to participate. Yeah, absolutely. So this is somebody new.
And we'll give out the phone number for it, for people
sure,
to
go
call.
Right ahead. Absolutely.
I'm looking for, oh, here it is. Area code 646. 595-2118. Give us a call,
right,
and Penelope will greet you and join in the conversation. Come with your questions for Bill, who is our survivor professional tonight.
Right. And it looks like she has found out who it is. Go ahead, Penelope.
Yep. Yeah. Hi, this is Billy from Massachusetts.
It's Billy from Massachusetts, Annie. Thank you for calling in.
Hi, Billy.
Yeah, how you guys doing? Nice to be on. Just I figured I'd pop on and, you know, need just, you know, whatever. Good get to fill the toolbox, always listening, always trying to better myself, but just concentrating on my self-care. And I was on the show before. I was abused by a priest in my hometown that is still a priest, and just continue on the path. And, you know, like I said, just calling in to listen and continue to self-care, continue in therapy. And I guess it's not made to be easy, and it's not. And whatever, just getting outside, getting in nature. Nice hour and a half hike today and yoga class this morning. But, again, just dealing with the trauma. And, you know, as we all know, we just go through the steps. And, you know, I try to stay in the moment, but, like, relationship-wise, I just, you know, healthy relationship, hard to find. And I guess that's a good thing in a way. I went for a walk with someone who maybe there was a potential, maybe girlfriend, but, you know, a couple of red flags. And I guess the good thing is I noticed it. And when you have a silver head, that's a good antenna to have, I guess. And doesn't make them a bad person. They're just at a different spot of their life. And but the antenna went up and just says, well, I know the answer there. And hey, it's just good to be breathing. And thanks for having me on the show.
Thank you, Billy.
Yeah.
Thank you, Billy. So, Annie, Bill dropped off, I think, temporarily. I think he just dropped temporarily. I saw his number drop. I'm sure he'll be back on.
Oh, okay. Phil.
Oh, there you are, Bill.
Yeah.
There you are. Oh, you lost someone else. Never mind. I need my glasses. So, Bill is still here. Bill and Billy are here. We lost our other caller that was most.
Right.
That's okay.
So
all right. Well, Bill, shall we?
Only who dropped off, okay? Annie, it was the fellow that had been listening only. So it was the fellow that had been listening. And he may come back or he may not.
I see. Okay. All right. Well, anybody want to bring up another subject, another topic or question for Bill?
I don't want to move ahead too quickly. I'd like to ask, before we ask that question, whether there's anyone that has more to share on being afraid, on anger, you know, and so forth. Because it's a huge topic, and I don't want to leave somebody thinking, hey, she didn't call on me, you know, anything like that. So I'd offer them to let me do it. I'd say, if there's anyone here that would like to add to the discussion we're having, which is the theme is anger or fear. There's a lot. I noted earlier that it's something none of us miss. We all own it, but some of us never learn how to deal with. So if there's somebody that has a question or a comment about fear or that side of things, we'd like you to be able to bring it up, and then we'll move to another topic if it's not the case. So
yeah,
okay.
I feel like the anger thing. I mean, I feel like my anger has gotten a lot better, but I also feel like it's still buried down there, and takes a lot more to bring it out. I guess that's some progress, but man, it's amazing. Not even amazing, that's the wrong word. It's just crazy how it just sticks in you. And I guess you get tests along the way in life, and you get those tests. And I don't know. My anger has gotten a lot better, but I also know that, I mean, probably like anybody, you can only be kind of pushed so far. And I guess you got to try to put your anger into a positive things, you know, maybe do the reverse to that. But no, definitely it's been in my life for a long time, especially when I was younger and in fighting and all that, but I couldn't figure out why I was so angry. And obviously being off drugs 7 years, I can now put it together is why I was so angry. And I guess we'll leave it at that.
So do you resent,
thank you, Billy,
your sobriety, your recovery at all, or are you happy about it?
I'm 100% happy, but it's just, well, these are issues that that they're just, it's not made to be easy. I'm definitely a lot better, and I have no regrets that way, because I'm breathing my brain to breathe it. Unfortunately, we got to breathe with these memories, but I'm very grateful to be living. But like I said, it's not made to be easy. I know it's getting better, but just I guess that's one of the hardest things. I don't know. I guess when you really think about it, you just got to maybe put your anger into another. You got to learn how to deflect it other ways, maybe, you know.
Okay, I like that. It's. I think the way I expressed it was similar, but I'm using different words. I said you can either live in the past, which is where you have, you know, these memories of things that were horrible to you, or in the future, which is where you're afraid, really. That's where fear is, or the present. And the only place I've found in all these years where I'm comfortable is in the present. And yet I don't get to hold on to that. I can have deep faith and a lot of ease and comfort in the individual day when I'm doing the things that I quote should be doing, unquote, you know, that I know, because I've done it before, will keep me you know, not only clean and sober, but also living a life that's spiritual, you know, that where I'm admitting the first thing we try to admit, that we're powerless. But there's someone we know that can take it from us if we want. So if I live in that vein, which is the first couple of steps, three steps, you know, I'm going to be okay. But that's not where we normally live. I think we normally live in the past and the future. And it's easy for us to slip back there, of course.
Yeah.
I try to practice mindfulness as Penelope has taught us to do, because I know that right now, right in this moment, everything is good. And I am safe. I have nothing to fear right in this moment.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. I guess the thing that really angers me is just like, you know, there's a whole backstory to my story that even when I was on with the attorney, but at the end of the day, this guy's still a priest in my hometown. And you know what? I was always an individual, and I'm not running from it. Like, I recently actually, it felt really good. The short story is about 2 years ago, I saw this priest in a bakery and he wouldn't come outside, and I'm glad he didn't, but I drove away, made a phone call. I did the right thing. And my legs weren't right for 4 days. And I recently, the last couple of weeks, he's under a Malkite order, which is a Lebanese order. And that bakery I go to is all Lebanese, and I'm pretty friendly with the people. And I actually showed him my bio and what had happened to me up at St. Basil's. And I go, and I know the owner. I go, I don't want you to feel bad for me, but I just want to alert you. If you know anybody that goes up there that have children, this is what happened to me up there. And it felt good doing, to be honest with you, you know.
No, I think
that was
really
courageous of you to do that. Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah.
So Billy, did you say that the bakery is owned by a Lebanese?
Yeah. So where this priest is, they're called Malkites, and it's actually, they do retreats there. They actually do retreats and adults. I don't even know. I call it happy horse shit, but they do some kind of retreats for adults. And yes, it's a Malkite order, and it's under a Lebanese order. And the bakery is a Lebanese bakery. And I just, like I said, I try to spread the word as much as I can. No, she was grateful. And I know them pretty good. And they grew up in my mom's neighborhood when I was younger. But she's like, thank you, and she shared it with her son, and they have kids, and it's just like, yeah. And I mean, as we all know, I mean, I mentioned on the show is I went in front of the Joint Committee of Massachusetts and told my story, and hopefully a law change comes, and they can out this guy. But I hate to even use the word, but like, he's very politically connected in this town with cousins and a mayor. that was a former mayor, and I feel like they all know, and as crazy as it is, I feel like they all know he's a pedophile. But, you know, I've heard plenty of terms saying, oh, well, he brings a lot of money in there. He's a good marketer, and it just boils my blood. It all comes down to money, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
It is what it is.
That's one of the things. That's one of the things that pissed me off about one of my predators who he collected money and he ran like business campaigns and so forth and events and sold tickets for, auctions and prizes and all this. He did that all the time. And he did raise a lot of money for the order, which was which was Benedictine's. And it consisted of, hundreds of priests, hundreds. And so they weren't going to do much to him, and they didn't. They took the report, but he stayed on. He did that the rest of his life because they were grateful that Father So-and-so, was doing that, and he was really good at it. So
yeah,
why would they change? And that's, I agree. It's horrible.
It's just crazy. It's insane, the politics in it. And the short story is, like, there's a backstory to this guy's family, and this is public knowledge, and I won't go naming names, but his brother was a very educated guy. He went to this really good high school, ranked really high, very intelligent, handsome guy, and he just went off the deep end, and he made a video, and he's homeless now, and he talks about the family, and he literally, this is totally public and totally true story, is like when he was running for state senate, he walked into his secretary's office without his bottoms on, and that's obviously what he did it twice, and obviously that took him out of the running for state senate. Guy made a video. It's called Broken Promises. It's on YouTube, and this is the priest's brother. You can just, there's like a big hidden secret in that family. There's no doubt about it. Yeah.
Wow.
Wow.
Oh yeah. It's insane. But you know what? I just I grew up in this town, and like one thing, unfortunately, growing up without a father is like one thing. I think I have a good trait is I was always self-driven, and I was always an individual, and even when as we all know too, is like, especially, being abused by him, that made me even more of a loner and to myself person. But I feel myself, and it's like I'm such a stubborn bastard in a good way. it's like I'm not running from this. I want to face him. I actually want to face him again because I regret not just saying anything to him when I saw him in the bakery. But I can tell you, I won't do anything stupid, but I will say some words to him very professionally. we'll leave it at that. But,
it's funny you just after telling us this horrible story. And we all get that. We get that laughter, those of us who are in recovery. And I remember early, like 40 years ago, that I was stunned by the fact that everybody was laughing at these ridiculous stories, these horror stories people were telling. And they'd all laugh,
yep,
the whole room.
Yeah.
What the heck's
you
going
can't
on
make
here?
It, you can't make it up,
I thought they must be smoking pot out in the alley behind the building or something. I don't know. But it's the laughter of identification. Because as you tell these stories, we're all nodding our heads. Yep, something like that happened to me. Oh, I've heard of that before. And so forth. And it's good to laugh, but the other people who have not gone through this and are not laughing, who hear it for the first time or very, relatively shortly after the first time, they're stunned still. And they're open mouthed. My God, how can he talk about stuff like that? Isn't he ashamed, and so forth? And we're not ashamed anymore. We were at one time, we're not anymore. I think it's great that you're that open to tell that story. I think it's great.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's like, you know, I was so ready to tell my story with the attorney and whatever. I'm not going to get deep into that. But at the end of the day, you know, thank God for like shows like this that I got to tell my story, and it just helped me even progress even more in recovery. And it's like I got shut up again by the lawyer. You know what I mean? And the crazy thing is, you know, our minds think a little extra because I feel like what happened to us in the attorney I had, and I won't mention his name, is from my hometown. And I'm not, you know, it just makes me think, like, and there's lawyers in the priest family, and it just makes me think if something really went wrong on the other end, there's some kind of games being done. I don't know. I can't honestly say that, but I can tell you it was very odd how my case ended, and my folder got handed back to me with the statute of limitations up. And this guy being the hotshot, very high-profile lawyer that he is, you can put two and two together and say, how did this lawyer make that mistake? And he just kind of led me on. Tried to have a conversation with him, but never put in the lawsuit. And I just shake my head to this day and say, there's just something wrong there. It doesn't end like that. You know, but I look at the positives and say I'm alive. So those were all tests in the middle too. So it's never been about money. It's always been about outing this guy. And he's still there, you know.
Well, are you in Maine? Is that what I see here, or Massachusetts?
I'm in Massachusetts.
Okay. So I don't think the statute of limitations has run on it. Well, not if it starts on from the time you remember, or the time you, you know, got sober or whatever. I don't know. I'm not sure.
So it has a 7-year law. So in Massachusetts, to go after the institution, it's 7 years from when you recognize it. So I saw the lawyer. Yeah, I saw the lawyer in 2011. And I wasn't sober, and I knew nothing about the effects. I wasn't in counseling or anything. At the end of the day, I had to put it on hold, and I revisited at 2015. I was ready. I was in counseling. And from what I gather after the fact is there's a tolling law which could have stopped the statute of limitations, and we could have picked right up where we left off. And there's also another law is when you have until you're age 53 to go after the perpetrator, but these perpetrators either hide their assets or they have nothing. And so the 7-year statute of limitations was over with. And then the lawyer wanted nothing to do, actually three other lawyers, and I can't blame them. I mean, a lawyer has to make money also. Is the statute, they didn't want anything to do with just going after the individual, and one lawyer actually, I think, checked his assets. And he's probably, I'm not going to call him smart, but his family probably, they probably hide his assets, to be honest with you. But, yeah, the 7-year thing didn't work out. I called him in 2015, and the original lawyer passed away in the middle. That we had an interview with the Malachites, and literally the morning of, it got canceled because they wanted to video it. Multiple times I was supposed to go public. The lawyer I had canceled it three times, multiple times. Him telling me, I'm going to send you to a forensic psychiatrist, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. Never followed through on any of it. And then he did a questionnaire at the end, and this doesn't make sense either. Did this questionnaire, he goes, so who did you tell? I go, well, and as we all know, it's like I told people, but I also didn't go into detail. Either I told them, you know, Father so-and-so used to put me under his gown, but nothing happened, which is totally normal. And that's probably as far as I got. And the lawyer was aggravated. He goes, well, I'm going to have to subpoena every one of those persons. There's probably 15 people. I'm going to have to subpoena those people. You've come a long way, and I don't want the case anymore. And that's how it ended.
Oh, yeah.
And he handed my 1,000-page folder back to me, mailed it to me, and that was it.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, that's crazy. And I got 3 different lawyers' opinions in Boston. And every single one of them say is, I can't believe, well, one of them said, I'm not surprised because all this lawyer does is settle cases. And two of them said, I'm not surprised. And they put it this way. They weren't surprised when they found out who it was, you know.
Out of reputation.
Out of reputation. And it's not too hard to figure out who it was. He was in a movie, and we'll leave it at that.
Oh, my.
Yep. So it's not hard to figure out. Very arrogant, you know, and very, it shocked me. My family was shocked. My therapist was shocked. Everybody was shocked just as much as I was. Yep. So it's just crazy how it ended. But again, I look at everything in the middle. In those times in the middle, I could have went back and used, and I didn't, you know. So I look at the positives to all of it, you know, and here I am today telling it, you know. So.
Well, thank you for telling
me. We have a guest call in that it's Sarah, I believe, regular girl. We have it listed as Peter, but it's Sarah who's there. And so Sarah needs to be called on too. What? Yeah, I know. I wasn't going to say it, but I know. All right, Sarah is here. We know her mostly as regular girl. Most of us know her as regular girl. She's a regular member of NASCA for a long time. So I just want to make you aware of it, Annie, and I'm going to open her mic to let her speak.
Welcome, regular girl.
We're talking about a theme, okay? And we're going to go back to another theme shortly. But right now we were listening to Billy's story from Massachusetts, and the general theme was how there's so much fear in us, and how we're trying to live in other places. So it was anger and fear was what Annie had. So if you want to make a contribution, that's okay. But I know we want to go. I want to go back to Penelope, if that's okay with everybody.
Sure.
Oh, thank you, Bill. Well, you know, I think.
Okay.
Let me take it back to you.
Go ahead.
So, well, what Billy stated, though, in terms of, you know, sometimes fear can transition to anger, but I think sometimes fear, when you actually do something, you know, taking action can be the antidote to that. You know, whether it's confronting the situation, whether it's telling the truth, whether it's, you know, telling your story, but I think doing something to address the fear is a nice way for me, and from what I hear from all the contributions, it's just one way to actually address the fear and to do something about it. And I think that's how we transition from fear, or we use the energy from that fear within our healing process. So, which is, you know, what I love about NASCA. Is we're all taking action in some way. I'm even being on the show tonight. So that's really what I wanted to add.
Okay.
Thanks, Penelope.
Yeah.
I wanted to make sure that Penelope was okay about where we left off with her when she was sharing about her life experience going on right now, because that was a big deal. And I don't want her to think that we didn't give her enough time to talk about it. She needs to talk, and she will need to talk, you know, going forward. Not constantly, but so that's why I wanted to go back
Thank
to you,
you
Sarah.
Bill.
That's really girl. Okay.
Thank you, Bill. And I've been pretty good about compartmentalizing, about just going from one bit of information for the next, and not trying to think too far ahead, because this is, you know. Sort of, I hate to say it, but metastatic cancer sort of, I feel like it's a little like abuse, where there's just this ugly thing and you just don't, there's no control. You have to wait from one little piece of information to the next. And for me, that has been difficult, you know, not to be able to wrap my hands around it. And so I don't want to be fear. I've been trying to just to release the fear. I've been trying to actually just live with the present bit of information that I have. And right now things are okay. He'll be starting treatment. There are options. And I just can't get too far ahead of myself. And that's a little bit about staying, and not really in the present moment, but in the present bit of information that I do have. But I do appreciate that, because this is going to be a long road and in a very unfamiliar one.
I'd say that the present group, facts that you have, the set of information that you have, is the moment. You don't know what else might come along later. And whatever you used to think is the fear of something different is gone. It's not that, you know, but it is serious. And, you know, I think you're pretty well in the moment. I mean, that's just my perception. But you need space to be allowed to do whatever you need to the event, even, you know. this is a big deal. And so since we were talking about fear and so forth, I thought I'd make sure that you were okay tonight.
Thank you, Bill. Yeah, thank you. I mean, I appreciate that. And I appreciate you allowing me to finish that thought.
Absolutely. So, Annie, maybe now is the time to ask if there's anybody with a new topic.
Okay, Bill. All right. Does anybody have another idea for a topic this evening? Having exhausted fear? And anger?
No, we didn't exhaust it, but you said a lot. I don't want to push it. But these shows are designed so that you can switch topics if you have time, and I think we will tonight, and I know we will tonight. Or you can stay on the same topic for the whole, you know, show. But it's a question and answer show with an open mic forum, so anybody can participate and just kind of jump in when there's a moment when nobody's talking, and add your 2 cents to the current topic. And then when we feel like we've finished the topic, the current topic, Annie, the host, will ask if there's other topics. So that sound right?
Yep.
Yep.
And I'll read the phone number again for people to call in if you want to be part of our panel. That phone number is 646-595-2118. And Penelope will answer you in the back room.
Is like, hey, let's face it, we're all in different spots in recovery, and like, I feel like I haven't got closure, and I feel like the memories and probably a lot of my anger is from not getting closure. But even if I got closure, does it get any easier to deal with?
Yeah, it does. I mean, I don't think the goal is closure. I think it's it might be justice, you know.
Yeah.
But closure.
Yeah, that's a
closure.
Better word.
Closure means, you know, a finality that's not there. It's not there even when you get justice. The person, let's say they go to prison, they're in prison, but they're still alive, and you still think about them, believe me. They have a big presence. So I don't think closure is the right word most of the time.
I agree.
And okay. And I would say that it's extremely common to go a long time into your recovery thinking you're seeking one and actually finding that you would be happy for the other. And besides that, you're happy if the guy isn't transmitting his disease to others still.
Yeah.
So there's different levels of success for us, but it's hard. It's hard to decide at what level we're okay. But I think you can be okay at one level, yet still be hopeful or even working towards something else.
Yeah.
But still be calm in the moment about what you have achieved. It sounds to me like you've achieved a great deal inside yourself, which is where recovery begins. or happens. And, you know, you'd still like the possibility of moving forward. And I think you have it, by the way, Billy, because I think you do. But you'd have to find a lawyer that would stick with you. You know, there's a difference between the abuses that occur by the individual, which are criminal, and the abuses that occur by the institution that in the case of a priest belongs to an institution or more, several institutions, like the diocese or the order, you know, or whatever it is. And that's a civil suit, right? That's a civil suit. It's against the institution, not the individual. I have a feeling you have a case against the latter. But I'm not as an attorney. You got to check this. But
yeah,
I think so.
Well, they know that the second attorney I had didn't make any promises, and he wrote a letter trying to open it up the conversation and get in a meeting. But at that point, they knew the statute of limitations was over, and basically they wrote a letter back saying we're going to forward everything to the perpetrator. And we don't represent them. It's like they just washed their hands of it because they knew the 7 years was up. And then I ran into the other obstacle of finding a lawyer that would just want to go after him. And again, on a lawyer's end of it, of course, they're going to check his assets. And one of them found out that he didn't have anything and they wanted nothing to do with the case. And that's kind of how it ended. But
so again, it's up to us to decide at what point we are willing to call it, you know, final. that we don't want to waste the energy anymore because we only have a finite amount of energy, right? And if I'm wasting it over here, I'm not going to have it for this other thing over here. And I want to spend my time doing good works, whatever that means. And I think NASC is one of those things. But I don't want to waste my time with, you know, getting entrenched in me getting justice. It's just, you know, not necessary. We often hear the expression that if people say that if they had gotten only what they thought they would like to have when they first got sober, they would have shortchanged themselves by a lot. And I agree.
Yeah,
you know, if we were so beat up and so in horrible shape that those of us who were abused and didn't have an answer or were, you know, overpowered by disease or whatever, like alcoholism, or, you know, we would have settled way before this. And now we feel the need to go further and further and further, and that's just not true. We can be happy with wherever we are, basically, is what I'm saying, which is the same thing as saying, in a roundabout way, we can be happy in this moment. For everything that's come up to this moment is what it is.
Yeah.
I'd like to share something, if I could.
Yes.
At this moment.
Yes.
Yeah, this is Regular Girl. So I've been sharing here at NASA for a while, almost 10 years, I guess. And I had something happen about 6 weeks ago. If that long ago, regarding the topic that you're talking about, this justice thing, and I guess you could even go back and, you know, find me talking on some of the shows. I have a tremendous amount of anger and really was honed in on this aspect of justice and was going down and attempting to go down some of the paths of justice. And at some juncture, something happened, and I hit a different turn. I decided to do something, to try something different, and I forgave. Something profound happened. I mean profound. And the results of that was that I was given new life, like in a profound way. Like I experienced a lightness that was as profound as what I had experienced in 1975 when I very first got sober and began 12-step program, like a really profound experience, which does not happen to everybody, and which I had been always extremely grateful for, but never expected to happen again, and certainly not in this context, because I had been working on it, you know, working on it in all kinds of ways for so many years. And it just was strange how it happened, but it did happen. So, you know, since then, I've been seriously trying to figure out a way to impart that, how it happened, to people that I know, you know, were at least as resistive to it as I was, right? But certainly I was so resistive to even that word, forgiveness. Look how many times I had heard it. Anyway, it did happen, right? So I just want to share that, you know, and it's just amazing just to be in such a new place with it, first of all. And maybe I'll stop, and because I said more than I took more time for me to say that than I thought it was going to. And for some reason, I've been thinking about this thing that happened in the early 80s at this thing that's called a roundup. It's an event that people in AA have sometimes. It's like one of these things that they have once a year. It's a combination social event with a meeting, you know, usually they hire a speaker from outside. And I was in Hawaii, had been living there for years, and someone from L.A. was going to come and talk. And his name was Bob Earl. This was the first time that I ever heard somebody talk about something that had to do with recovery. And he talked about recovery from these issues that we're all talking about. And all of us that night, I'm telling you, it changed not just my life, but the lives of countless people who were sitting at that roundup that night. He talked about this. He was a successful comedy writer. He had a career, and he got injured, right? This is how the story started. But this was an AA meeting, an AA roundup, right? This was the first time that any of us had ever heard a story that was not going to have to do necessarily with alcohol. And he had gotten injured, and he couldn't like go to work. And he was flipped out. He was terrified. How was he going to pay his rent? This is how the story was going. Meanwhile, the other part of the story, too, is like normally I would have been preoccupied. I was in the AA band. The dance was going to be after that. I was preoccupied. I was going to be doing my Stevie Nicks imitation, Pat Benatar combo thing. You know, normally I would have been preoccupied with that afterwards. I was transfixed listening to this guy's story, because what it was about was what ended up happening was he had had an injury that had to do with his ankle that he traced back to his early childhood for the first time in his life that had to do with child abuse, okay? So now I had about 10 years of sobriety at the time. But you know those, now Bill, I'm like Bill, so I was into 12-step recovery. But with 10 years of sobriety, I was still looking. I had worked, and I had dove into the steps. I had worked the steps, like from the big book. I was really into it, but those promises, I didn't have them. The feelings of uselessness and self-pity had not disappeared. It was like I didn't have that inner peace. That's what I wanted. I was still terrified of, like, being homeless. I was still crying at night. Those feelings of uselessness and self-pity were still there. It was like, anyway, he told his story of shame and fear that was still ruling his life, even though he was a successful Hollywood screenplay writer, you know, and he was driving a fancy car and all that. He was still terrified inside. And he could talk about it. He could make jokes about it, but it still hadn't gone away. We were transfixed listening to this guy. Even after he left, we couldn't stop talking about it. He rocked our world. He changed our lives. That was like early 80s, you know? And it's like the peacefulness that I feel today, though, came with the forgiveness. So I haven't stopped fighting or wanting the justice. But, God, it's that peacefulness. And that comes from something spiritual for me. It did. It does. And that's something that, thank goodness, it doesn't cost financial tenders or money or anything like that, but it does have a price. We all know that. And, we're here for each other. So that's good news, right? God, I love you so much, Bill, for doing this, for being here still. I think of that every time I dial it up. You're still here, you know? So I want to make sure that I am too. Thank you. Thank God.
Thanks, regular girl. Thank you for bringing up the subject of forgiveness as what leads to your peace of mind. I'd like to talk a little bit about forgiveness because I have not forgiven my dad, the perpetrator, or my mom, who was also abusive. They're both gone now. They both died a long time ago, and I don't forgive them. I don't see any reason to forgive them because they never changed their behavior. They were both the same, just as mean and abusive when they were dying as they ever were. And I always felt that I don't have to forgive someone unless they've changed their behavior. So, should anybody have any thoughts on that?
I do, but I've just talked a long time, so I'll sit back for a bit, and I'll talk later maybe about that. If it wasn't them necessarily that I forgave.
Right. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Anyone else?
I could talk too if you want, but I think I'd rather offer the time to Sarah, or not to Sarah, to not you, Sarah, or somebody else who hasn't spoken in a while. Billy, maybe.
Well, this is Penelope. I can talk. Go on, Billy.
It's Dan. I'm just listening.
Okay.
Well, you know, I think forgiveness is, you know, one of these topics that I don't think, you know, we all are on our own path and our own journey, and we're working through, we work with every day in recovery, all these things. And I think forgiveness is very individual. For me, you know, I was born, I was the firstborn of three siblings. My brother is a year older than I am. But from my nature, I've always been a loving, forgiving person by nature. And so for me, I think there's a toll in the sacrifice to forgive, especially if the patterns of conduct, you know, from the parents and the family of origin do not change. But for me, I did forgive, and I think it's a process, an ongoing process. It's not easy. But I have forgiven only because they don't deserve it, but I do. And I was the one thing I was not going to allow my abuse to take from me was the essence of who I am. And the essence of who I am has always been loving, a loving, never been jealous of my siblings, always been forgiving. So I was going to give them forgiveness for me. I was not going to allow the abuse to change me, the core of who I was. But no, it's just something it's a process. I work on it every day. I can't say, well, I've forgiven my mother. I've forgiven my father. But it's something that I work on constantly, because of, that's why it's so important to me. I deserve it. So that's my 2 cents on forgiveness.
Thanks. That's very meaningful to me. I'm going to think more about that and write more about that, too. Thank you, Penelope.
You're welcome.
Billy, would you like to comment?
No, just listening in. Thank you.
Okay. How about Regla Girl? You said you had something to say.
Okay, yeah. It's like, there used to be a part of me that there were major abusers in my life. And it was like there was a part of me that blamed them for certain things and chain of events that I've let go of. Like, that's the big weight that was lifted. Okay, and then there's those same people. It's like what's there now instead is sometimes, like, I'll remember a part of, like, say, my mother was one of those people, and my father. And there'll be sometimes when it's like if I'm remembering a certain a narrative or a little story, when you don't call those narratives, but a little story of something that they did that I disagree with, I can look at it like that now. It's something about them that I disagreed with, you know, but it's in that way now. It's just like a disagreement. I see it that way. It's in that way, you know, and I can laugh about that. You know, it's not attached to that old narrative of they were fault for da 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 da. And also, the other thing that happened is that I was shown in a kind of a deep prayer meditation thing. That's what I mean, and that's where this gets spiritual. And I do know enough about these people's history, and there were other abusers as well. I love my mother, and she was hurt too, and in ways that I was shown. And my heart, I could feel my heart, like I really love her. That I loved her, loved that. I love that little girl. There's more love than there is hate in who she is as an entire soul being. Like there's a phrase in the Bible, and I'm not enough of a scholar to be able to quote biblical texts like that, but I do know there is one that says sort of like that the soul of God is in everyone. And before this happened to me, I could never see that in her. And it's like it was shown to me where that is. And it's like I can still see that now. I just see that. Like as if somebody changed me. That's what it is. Somebody changed my soul. And that's what needed to happen. Christ inside of me. Oh, wow. I sound really... it's a little scary. It's a little scary to... for me to be different. But that's...
But you do it so well. You've been doing it for years.
What?
You've been doing it for years and so well.
Doing what? Being
different.
Oh, I'm embarrassed.
Oh, God. So, okay. I'm not sure how
I don't like that feeling.
No, you're fine. Believe me.
Okay.
I've loved you for years. You know that. So, for me, forgiveness is, you know, I think the thing that I heard most in the explanation of I want to talk about forgiveness in the next share too, was that we have to wait for the other person to be worthy of our forgiveness. And I don't agree. And we would be waiting forever, frankly, if that's the case. We don't ask for them to forgive us. Well, I mean, I don't think that we're asked for them to forgive us and wait for them to get to that place of forgiveness. We forgive them no matter what. And when we forgive them, we realize that we don't have control. This is so central to the themes that we that we talk about all the time. We don't have control, never did as a kid, never did in, you know, as a traumatized person, don't have it in recovery either. No control. So we better, you know, get busy with giving forgiveness as best we can to the people that have control of us, as institutions or whatever it is. We're in, seeking our own recovery, not theirs. That's up to them. I mean, it's a personal thing whether they ever get it or not. But for us, it's our personal thing. So we're looking for opportunities to heal, and one of those is to not hold something against somebody else. And the only way to do that, I think, is to forgive. And that's in advance of, you know, of them doing anything for us or for the world. So that's what I was going to say, at least the first thing I was going to say.
I heard something that meant a lot to me that you said, regular girl. And I'm not sure exactly how you said it, but it was something like that there's more to love in that person than there is to hate in them. And that was a real eye-opener because it never occurred to me that there was anything decent in either of my parents. I mean, I've always had a 100% evil outlook on them. But now that you've said that, all of a sudden I can see them as children and see them doing good things, and they, you know, they're not 100% evil. And I think that's a good realization for me. Perhaps forgiveness will come down the road.
Yeah.
Well, I realized they were part of our history. They are part of my history. That's why I was so angry, you know, because I knew I was attached in some way that I had to make peace with that. That's why I was so angry. I love what you said about control, Bill. I had written that down. There is that aspect too. And I had written that down on this paper. It's so important that I have to deal with that in the moment so many times. That realization, that understanding, that truth that I don't have control. That's what upsets me. I have to make peace with that truth many times. And what
sounds
do
good.
I do about that?
Yeah.
In life, real life. Am I a peacemaker or a producer of chaos? I love that phrase.
I think it's going to take a long time for me to forgive my perpetrator, to be honest with you. I know it's
That's
just
okay.
an area. I'm a thinker and I'm a wicked analyzer is like, you know, now, I mean, as everything is clear as day, is like the thing that really, I tell you, the thing that really steams me is like, so this guy baptized my kids and married me and my wife. And, you know, I'm not going to, you know, at least like I was on drugs. I mean, to be honest with you, like we had our kids first, then we got married and we were young parents. And we beat the odds of staying together. And I look at his point of view. Like, I kind of try to get inside what he was thinking. Is like, the thing that really, like, makes me think about it is, like, he knew what he did to me, and he was still all right putting his hands on my kids. And maybe I overanalyze or maybe I overthink, but that just even makes it more harder for me to to forgive that. Like, and again, maybe I'm overthinking, but that's just how I feel. Yeah.
Thanks, Billy.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is, you know,
Bill,
I can
do you have anything?
I can put two and two together, like, why he wouldn't come back to my mother-in-law's house after he married us at the church. And then I think back, why he didn't make us go through pre-K. And it's like, and again, as we all know, you keep that secret, and the secret's between you and him. And it's just, but he, when I think about it even more, and I, obviously I don't think like him, but I, like I said, I'm an analyzer. I work in a prison system for 19 years. I get a good read on people. And obviously, like, I think about stuff now, especially having a sober head, is like, it was just natural for him. You think the natural thing would have been to say, no, I can't do it. But it was the total opposite when you really think about it. It makes it even more crazier, in my opinion.
Well, hopefully what I'm going to say can be helpful to you.
Yes.
Like, everything that you can learn from your anger from this, you know, during this period where you can't forgive, that, and you like to analyze and think, you can learn from everything. Like, as an example, like, I could sit for and be like, I have this eating disorder. So there were times where I would just be munching and crunching, and, you know, I love salty, hard, crunchy foods, you know, and I had some eating disorders, you know, great counseling, you know, where I learned that there was a correlation, you know, so I'd be sitting overeating, you know, I'd watch what I ate, you know, and I'd be tripping, thinking, I'd have memories come up. I'd be thinking, be planning their demise. Would I be crunching on my chips and my ice cream? Seriously, and I'd be planning their demise. But I'd also be thinking about myself and my lack of forgiveness and all that stuff. Or you know, I'd go on particular, you know, drug runs. And, you know, as I'm even talking to you, I'm thinking, you know, maybe that could be useful now. I can start to share some of that. But that's what I used to do, you know, because during these periods, that is what we're doing. You know, and that's what we're going to learn from these things. That's just the way that it is. This is a safe place for us. This place is a safe place for us. You know,
mm-hmm.
You'll learn from it. God's with you.
Yeah.
God's
Thank
with
you.
Us.
Well, let me
Bill,
say
would
that
you
this
like
is
to,
yeah. Let me say that this has been a very good show. We covered a couple of really good topics, and this is kind of common to our experience that we've had recently when this kind of show has come up. And what I mean by that is, we have been struggling with booking all the shows. We carry a lot of shows, and guests are volunteers who we have to go find every week. We find them, of course, in the month, hopefully before the show. But what's happened recently is we haven't been able to book people. So we've had a lot of evenings when there wasn't a guest there. And so what we've done a few times in the recent past, and we did it tonight too, basically, is we had somebody take the lead. It's usually the host. And identify the fact that we don't have a guest tonight, so we have a question and answer open mic show, and the themes are going to come from whoever shows up, the participants and the panelists, and we just do it that way, and it really works very well. So I'm not at all averse to continuing that, because it leaves a lot of pressure off of me. I'll continue to try and get guests. But when I don't, no big deal. We'll do the question and answer show kind of thing. You know what I'm saying? So
Bill,
I don't know what you guys feel
Hello?
About it. Go
Bill,
ahead.
Hi.
I'm sorry. It's Penelope. I wanted to let you know that Robert has joined us, and he knows you. He hasn't been on for some years. But he called in, and I just wanted to let you know he's here, and he did have something to say.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi there. Can you hear me okay here?
Of course.
Yes.
Hi. Is this Bill?
This is Bill.
Huh? This is Bill. Oh, great. My name is Robert. I live in the San Fernando Valley.
Yeah.
And this is not a new subject. I just thought I'd get your input on it. I'm a typical person that was so embarrassed and afraid to share what happened to me, that for many, many years, got into my 50s, I couldn't tell it to anybody. I'd like to hear what you folks have to say about that, and how did you resolve it with yourself? Because I'm sure that there was some guilt experienced because of not reporting it earlier.
Well, it's a big topic, and we talked about it tonight earlier, but we're going to talk about it regularly because it is so central to everybody's recovery. It's kind of the first thing we have to deal with is the sense that we're keeping this secret and we're doing it deliberately. I'm not talking. You know, I'm not talking because of blah, blah, blah. mostly fear and resentment and so forth. But a lot of times, you know, we have fear of stuff, like fear of being,
not accepted, rejected, or judged?
Being thrown away, basically. That's what I felt like. If I go into this meeting and I talk about this, they're going to tell me to go away. Well, they didn't, but that was my fear. It was one of my fears. So I'm trying to make sure that you understand that we're running out of show. We have 2 minutes left, but this is a topic that we talk about regularly, and we would be happy to talk about on the next show you're on. And,
okay.
You know, I just want you to know that.
Sure. When is the next show?
Well, we do shows 5 nights a week. But
oh, you do?
Different
okay.
shows. Yeah. So they're at, where are you located? What town, what city? Or,
I'm
or what
located
state?
In the San Fernando Valley.
Oh, right. San Fernando.
yeah.
So California, it starts at 5, and it goes for an hour and a half till just now, 6:30, it'll stop.
5 West Coast time, okay.
Yes.
And I assume it's national, international?
It's international, yes.
Oh, great, great.
Yeah.
I left a message, a personal message for you on your phone, so that way if you wanted to contact me. Sure.
Sure,
well, thanks
sure.
anyway. Thanks
thank
for
you.
Taking
hope
my.
We, yeah.
And I'll make a note here on the calendar to try to tune in perhaps tomorrow evening at
sure.
5 p.m. West Coast time. Correct.
Correct. So, yeah.
Okay. Thanks again.
It's 8:00 Eastern. Okay. Be well.
Sure, bye.
Thanks
so
for calling.
That's a nice addition at the very end, yeah. All right, Annie, I'll step back and it's up to you.
Well, again, I don't have the studio in front of me, so I'm not sure about
oh, nice.
Exact minutes, but I know the
oh,
voice
got,
will come on and tell us. I'd
you
like to thank
minutes,
everybody
Annie.
For... Thank you, Penelope.
Thank you.
I'd like to thank everybody for coming, and I think it was a really great show. I sure took a lot of notes and learned a lot. And how about Bill for a last thought?
Well, I tell you what, there is no finality to this. We keep learning more and learning more and learning more, which is why I didn't feel so bad about, you know, just letting Robert know that, you know, I'm sorry we're out of time. If he had called in earlier, we actually discussed the same topic earlier. But we're willing to discuss it any time because you can't finish it, you know. You can't finish it. And it resonates with every person who was traumatized in their youth and or was abused in their youth and traumatized in their adolescence and 20s, that they have to deal with this. And it's fear. You know, it's being ashamed. It's a matter of being afraid that people will think down, you know, look down at us and so forth. It's going to happen over and over and over, but don't worry about it. That's what happens. All right. I'll go ahead and play the music, I guess. Or are you doing this, Penelope? I can do it, I think. All right. Thank you all for listening tonight, and please come back for another edition of Stop Child Abuse Now.
Gone with